Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Raise your flag, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. South Korea went through in dramatic fashion, but Uruguay are off home. It's Saturday, 3rd of December. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Lars Iversen.
It's over, everybody. It's over. The first round is over. And yeah, what a first round it was, Jim Campbell.
Absolutely. This would normally be a day off, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Putting strain on relationships
all over the world,
yeah, I would imagine. But yeah, it was pretty good, wasn't it?
I mean, the permutations guys have had a very exciting couple of days now. I love the fact that at one point we almost went to the drawing of lots. I mean, it was in sight. It could have happened. Obviously, it didn't happen. But yeah, that's where we've been at. The yellow cards have been have been relevant, at least in the way. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was the case at the last World Cup. People can forget that Senegal went out on disability.
Unfortunately for them, yes. Yeah, the very polite and tidy Japanese.
That's right.
You got their just desserts and rewards.
But both are through, which is the important thing. We have to go, of course, to the Korea Republic, or as we affectionately call them, South Korea, Jim. They beat Portugal 2-1. They're through to the last 16 on goals scored.
Yeah, unbelievable.
You see, it always pays to attack.
Well, it does.
Unless you're Serbia. Because they can't defend, but we'll come on to them.
We'll get to that.
Portugal know they're going through, right?
Yeah.
Cristiano Ronaldo knows he's going through.
Oh, yeah.
Putting Portugal through isn't enough. So, besides, I'll just give a little assist to South Korea, get them on the way, and two countries can go through on the back of my genius.
That was an amazing moment, because it's so, because his brand is so much about, like, machismo, and I'm so big and strong, and my muscles, look at this, I'm so tough. That's why I'm better than Messi, even though I'm not. That whole thing. And then they lose the game, basically, because he doesn't want to get hit in the face by the ball. It's like, oh God, no, the ball, what do I do? And he should have ducked out of the way.
I mean, we remember Ronaldinho with that lovely back pass.
Yes.
You know, it was sort of inadvertently in that bracket, wasn't it? But South Korea, it handed them the equalising goal, because they went 1-0 down just after 5 minutes, and it wasn't looking too good.
The worst. And also, at this point, you think, oh, some of these groups are going to fizzle out and be quite boring and predictable. Mm-hmm. And also you're thinking, oh, Portugal are going to win every game.
Yeah.
And nobody managed that at this World
Cup.
Not
one team
stage,
did. Yeah, nobody finished in the first round with 9 points. So South Korea, of course, they drew 0-0 in their first game with Uruguay. Then they lose 3-2 to Ghana. And it looks very, very unlikely. But, I mean, for anybody who saw that game against Ghana, you know, they saw that they've got a bit of attacking flair, of course, and they showed it here with two. I mean, the Hwang Hee Chan goal right at the death. My goodness, you know. I mean, and of course, when the game finished, you saw the players and the supporters watching the last moments of that Uruguay and Ghana game, because another goal for Uruguay would have knocked them out. They were just huddling around the phones, and you could see who had the best stream,
yeah,
because somebody was started celebrating quicker than others.
And that was such a... The goal was such a huge moment by Son as well, because Son's had a bit of a tricky tournament.
He has.
I think he's noticed that, I mean... When he's playing for South Korea, he's not so much getting doubled up on as tripled up on. Yeah. Like, every time you see Son on the ball, there's like a cloud of enemy forces around him.
Yeah.
Whereas for Tottenham, they all have to like worry about Harry Kane and Kulusevski and the lads, whereas now they're all like, it's all on Son. So,
do you think the mask kind of makes them think, oh, he's obviously some sort of
crusader? It's that one. Yeah, yeah.
He's such a superhero for this team. He has to wear a mask, so they go to. But he was trying a lot to do it himself.
Yeah, because he often kind of has to. But it hasn't been going for him. Mm-hmm. But here in the 91st minute, he did find the energy for that heroic sprint up the field.
Incredible.
And then had a tremendous sort of presence of mind to wait until his teammate.
Not
go for a shot, wait for Wang Yichan to come. And actually, the pass is really good.
Nutmeg
pass, and the timing of it is perfect. Like, it is very easy to mess up that pass. In the 90th minute of the game as well.
It was just beautiful.
He's delivered in a huge, huge moment on the biggest stage.
Yes,
that may well go down as his defining moment for the national team.
And it shouldn't be forgotten, you're absolutely right. But the thing is with the nutmeg pass is it wasn't, you had to play it through the defender, quite literally.
Mm.
And as you say,
another 15 defenders around him, as usual.
But I mean, he would have been tempted, because it took a little while, understandably, for Hwang Hee-chang to catch up with him. And because he might have looked around and thought, right, well, got to do this on my own, you know, kind of thing, and would have had a go, but he did it beautifully. And
Korean language commentary on that goal is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't sorted out, please do.
Well, it was nice for Maurizio Pochettino to be watching on the BBC.
Delighted
as well.
As well, yeah.
Absolutely glorious. Hwang Hee-chang was obviously celebrated, taking his top off, revealing those abs. And when he picked up his Player of the Match award, he was topless as well, like proper celebrating, rather different to Kai Havertz.
Should put those pictures side by side, actually. This is not all Man of the Match awards are created equal.
Yeah, or welcome, depending on the result. I mean, Ronaldo himself, the aforementioned, missed a couple of good chances, of course. So it could have been oh so different.
Get that assist. So they all count.
Mm. Indeed. South Korea are a very likable side.
Yes, are they not?
For sure.
I mean, that was the tricky thing. When South Korea played Ghana, I was like, oh man, two of the most likable sides, you know, but clearly only one of them's going to go through because of Portugal's dominance in the group. I mean, could you say that Uruguay are one of the more likable sides? Or perhaps not? We'll leave that for a moment.
Depends on how high you value drama.
Yeah. Well, I mean, South Korea provided the drama.
Yeah. Very highly, Jim.
And Paulo Bento, of course.
Mm-hmm.
He was
in
his box, harking back to Lars's gag the other day, because he was in the stands watching, and he was, of course, a former Portugal international, Portugal manager, who took Portugal to the 2014 World Cup. I mean,
and there were some good shots of him in the crowd, like when he looked like he wanted subs to happen and stuff like this, when he was just, guys, go do this, that, and that.
Oh, he had a good stress level.
Yeah, he really did.
As you could imagine, yeah. But amazing for him, you know, and through they go. I mean, he did lead Portugal to the semis of Euro 2012, I should say. But this in the World Cup, obviously, they went out in the first round, 2014.
But if you were sent to the stand, would you not be shouting down at the bench, like, effing sub him, like, do this?
He was at times.
Because very often it looks like they have a phone or a fella sat next to them with the phone, but I don't think he had that. It didn't look
like
it.
Does he need a translator? You see?
I hadn't thought of that.
I mean, South Korea, they've had a number of challenges at the World Cup, of course, notwithstanding the, you know, losing to Ghana and then having to bounce back. But one of their strikers has been inundated with marriage proposals because apparently so handsome. Cho Gyu-sung, who is a handsome chap, I say apparently, I'm only denying myself. He had about 20,000 Instagram followers when the tournament started. And after he scored that brace against Ghana, including that beautiful towering header, he now has 1.8 million. His phone has been going mad. He struggles to sleep. He put it on silent, big lad.
Turn off the notifications.
I know. I mean,
very easily fixed.
Exactly. Throw your phone in the river or the sea, whatever body of water is closest. Get yourself another one.
But he needs to listen to the very excellent curmudgeonly manager of Australia, Graham Arnold, who has banned social media.
Has he?
Yeah, he's told him not to go on any social media after the games. and he thinks it's very bad for the players. And the quotes were pretty good, actually. He said, because
do it in the accent.
No, I mean, you know what? No, because I like Australians and I don't want them to be mad with me. Okay. But he said, that's
G'day,
what
mate.
He said. For God's sake.
Go on, Lars.
I'm not doing the quotes now. I don't want to do the quotes.
Why don't you do it in the accent?
On social media, he said.
Do it in the accent of a country you don't like.
Yeah.
No, you'll do an English accent. Yeah.
I don't want to talk now.
Go on. What are the quotes, Lars? Go on.
Because if there's one thing I learned at the Olympics, it's that after a big win against Argentina, it was too much celebration. And that celebration is social media. They get on that until 4 or 5 a.m. and watch all the great comments, enjoy all that shite. And it affects the sleep patterns. You're up until 5 a.m. looking at good comments, and the same people backing you are the ones killing you the day after. Yeah. So just get rid of it. Don't look at it.
There we are. See.
Yeah,
wise words, and they're through themselves.
I mean, I've not really been in a position where I've had to sit up until 5 looking at positive comments on social media, so I can't really identify.
You never
with
know
this.
After this podcast. Yeah, well,
that's, you have someone.
It seems
doing
unlikely
it, right?
So far, yeah. Marcus.
Yeah, you have someone curating it for the players, yeah. And then they can have a lovely sleep, and the next day they can read about how brilliant they are. That would be my fix.
Put yourself
call
forward
me Gareth.
I was about to say, yeah. Put yourself forward, Jim. Now Portugal, they went through, of course, despite losing that game. And they could now, because they won the group, they could face their old neighbours and rivals, Spain, in the quarterfinal. And according to Real Madrid legend and former Mexico player Hugo Sanchez, he was saying some interesting things about Spain's 2-1 loss to Japan, who meant they finished second in a group. He thinks Spain did it deliberately so they would avoid Brazil in the quarterfinals. Big Hugo said, I assure you, I was not there, and I'm not in the mind of Luis Enrique, but he had thought about what was the best way to avoid playing Brazil in the quarterfinals. Yes, there is a risk, but it's a risk worth taking.
We've seen this said a lot, but it isn't like Spain weren't trying to score.
Yeah.
They were busting a gut. Like they didn't want to lose that game.
No.
It certainly didn't seem that way to me anyway.
No, I don't think so.
I was kind of hoping... I was only very, very happy for Japan in that game, but it would have also been funny if it got to like a couple of minutes before the end and Spain were still in the lead, where they would basically be in a situation where they could pick and choose who they wanted in the next round. Yeah. Like, just score a couple of own goals here. Yeah. I think let's just head over in this side of the bracket.
Yeah. All right, chaps. Well, elsewhere in Portugal's group, of course, Ghana were beaten 2-0 by Uruguay. They didn't get their revenge in one way, but they definitely dragged Uruguay down with them.
That's what I sort of enjoyed about this. Obviously, it was a bit... Because there was so much drama in such a different way. Suarez is on the pitch. There are players on the pitch that played in that game on both sides. Obviously, Andre Ayew misses the penalty, having missed the game in 2010 because he was suspended. It's like that was his chance to kind of affect this game when he couldn't be there. That must have been so frustrating before. And it had so much drama. Again, Uruguay were complete shithouses. You felt sorry for Ghana again. It was a bit like when Trainspotting 2 came out. And it was like, oh, we didn't need this. But you know what? It's actually quite good.
I like that. I mean, Ian Wright sort of summed up quite well. He said, well, Ghana will take that. I mean, they'll take the 2-0.
They've held the 2-0 loss.
Well, I think the fact is that...
It's a huge silver lining.
Yeah, I think the fact that the way the game panned out, though, Lars, I mean, as you say, Jim, the penalty miss was just like, oh...
Yeah, it was such a poor penalty as well, wasn't it?
I know, of all the things. And then, of course, Uruguay de Arrascaeta scores two in sort of quick succession. And that really... I know Ghana, they rallied and they their energy levels didn't drop. And in the second half, they were still pushing on, had a couple of efforts and goalkeeper made some good saves and all. But really... It was a huge ask after that double from him.
It was, especially when the referee didn't want to give them penalties.
Well,
they had two very, very strong penalty shouts turned down. Mm-hmm. So a bit of injustice there for Ghana, which I guess, no, sorry, for a bit of injustice for Uruguay, which I'm sure the Ghanaians were delighted with.
Yeah, well, Cavani took his own, took it out on the VAR machine. Machine? The monitor.
Yeah.
Clearly not a machine.
Uruguay is like a magic eight ball. Yeah.
No penalty.
Not
maybe
likely.
That is how they start doing it.
Outlook is gone clear at this point.
The VAR machine has said, ask me again later, for God's sake.
I need to know now.
Uruguay's absolute commitment to villainy is incredible. I like how the Ghana players were so certain that they would try and scuff the penalty spot that they guarded it. You don't really see that happen.
But Darwin Nunes still had a little gig.
Exactly. He still tried to do it, then got booked and was furious about it. They wasted so much time around that very deliberately, and I wonder if that contributed to RU's penalty miss.
But I also wonder, I mean, I don't know if you've seen the video, but like Valverde like trolling the ref after the penalty was missed. Yeah. It's like, I know that they enjoy a bit of the dark arts, Uruguay, but I feel like they may have gone too far here.
I think they've gone too far.
And when the referee then doesn't give them penalties later on in the game.
Well, because Uruguay, they're sort of that kind of anti-hero, if you know what I mean. Because as you say, the dark arts are unusually, in this part of the world, we would kind of scoff that a bit, even though players from this country have got, you know, in terms of physicality and so on, have been well versed in that over the years. But there is a very likable quality about Uruguay. The fact is, they know what they're about.
Yeah.
They're a country of a very small population. They punch well above their weight, and they do punch.
They get at you. They get amongst it. They wind you up. They ruffle your feathers.
But they're a likable shithouses, if you know what I mean.
Well, it just depends on if you're in the end of it.
But I think this time, as Lars says, they've gone a little bit too far.
And I think it's also when you don't have skin in the game, you just want football to be not boring.
Yes.
And I think sometimes in terms of the actual play, they can be boring, but they add stuff and drama and histrionics.
Because they just cheat.
Yeah,
it is as simple as that, isn't it?
But I mean, like chasing the referee and the officials off at the end.
Yeah.
But that's put like that. I mean, I genuinely was quite concerned for, I think it was the linesman. I was like, bloody hell, that guy's in his face. I mean, that was unsavoury.
Yes.
And it's just like, come on, lads. You know, like, I understand. I mean, look, Cavani, I think it was Cavani, wasn't it, when he was fouled? I mean, that should have been a penalty.
Yes, absolutely. And I thought the first one on Nunes was a penalty as well, even though he did get a tiny touch of the ball.
Yeah, that is.
Both of those, if they happen near the centre circle, it's a foul and no one bats an eyelid, right? No. And the way the laws of the game are written, if that happens in the box, it should be a penalty as well.
Was the Nunes one not... didn't Nunes handle it? Was that why...
I don't think that's why it wasn't given, because they kept looking at the replay to see if there was a touch on the ball. So that seemed to be what the referee was honing in on.
But it wasn't given.
No, absolutely not. And it turns out, trolling the ref in the first half, not the smartest thing you can do with regards to getting decisions.
People do forget that the referees are human beings.
Yeah.
Even though their integrity, I don't think it should be questioned, but they are human beings.
It is a funny one, because we're kind of like reveling in the hysteria, histrionics and the chaos of Uruguay. But at the same time, you're right. Like, it's not good behavior what we saw after the game.
It was genuinely disgraceful.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. Really they're often likable when they set up their, you know, if you look at the team, you know, I remember, you know, the first game in this tournament, I thought, I quite like this side, a bit of experience, got some good young players and so on. And you know that they deploy some of the dark arts and so on. But because of their size, because of who they are and all that, you kind of think, I respect that, because it's taken them far in tournaments before. You know, they've got a great, in fact, the best record, I think, in Copa Americas, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's a remarkable achievement for such a small country who know what they're about. But that's a bit too far. But did you, Lars, enjoy... Luis Suarez's tears as much as, I mean, our very own Luke Moore was very, very vocal on Twitter about how much he enjoyed it.
I'm not a big Suarez hater, really.
Are you not?
No, not really. So I, you know, maybe that did something for someone. I mean, if the Ghanaians felt very happy about it, then good for them, I guess. Mm.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing, isn't it, Jim? That dragging
the
them down
that we have to look at
is okay. They realistically, you know, they were still bombing forward and creating, but 2-0 down, they needed much more. Seems very unlikely. If you'd have offered them then, all right, at the end of the game, Suarez will be crying and upset.
His World Cup career ends in tears.
Yeah.
Ends in him crying in front of the whole world.
More because of South Korea.
Yeah.
But Ghana, you know, did play their part.
You defend.
Yeah.
You defend for your lives and you can take
that 2-0 defeat.
Yeah, it's so dramatic.
I did think also Uruguay were hoist a little bit by their own cautiousness here, because they didn't really go for a third after going 2-0 up. And that ended up costing them. I mean, that if they'd gotten the third, that would have been enough. And they didn't seem to try it. It's almost like they didn't even consider the possibility that South Korea could do something against Portugal. And that's what did for
but
them.
But they did have the chance. I mean, not the man you'd maybe want on the end of it. Was it Coates who put 1-1? When Cavani gets that ball, I thought, bloody shoot, man. You know, if I was a Uruguay fan, I'd be much happier with Cavani shooting at an angle rather than trying to square it to Coates. But mind you, old Big Ziggy in goal in Ghana, he very much got the memo and he was like, right, they're not going through.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to make sure. And they did, and they're out. They are out.
I'm really tickled by the idea of having a magic eight ball instead of VAR. That's really stuck with me.
Yeah,
don't... Maybe I want to have one at home. Every time something goes to VAR, I can just do the magic eight ball first and put that on Twitter.
Please don't say that too loudly, because Infantino will get on you.
Yes!
He really do. Yes. But speaking of going home early, did you hear about Belgium? Obviously, they're out.
Home early, yeah.
But five of the squad, including Thomas Meunier and Axel Witsel, flew home even earlier from Qatar at their own expense.
Yeah.
They just wanted to get the hell out of
there. Get away from all these guys.
Yeah. These oldies.
Yeah.
Yeah, a fascinating one. And of course, Roberto Martinez is no longer the Belgian manager. Louis van Gaal, who will be on the bench today a little bit later, he was asked about taking the now vacant Belgium manager's job, and he grinned, of course, saying, "Belgium is a beautiful country with friendly people. Knokke is a beautiful beach palace. I've already thought about it."
So this is while he's under heavy criticism for his own team being too boring at the World Cup.
Yeah.
And he is like salivating at the prospect of his next job while at a press conference taking questions about his current job. Managing his own nation. The man is a one-off.
He does not give two shiny.
He doesn't care, does he?
It's brilliant. Well, I'll do it on.
Yeah.
Well, if Louis van Gaal can convince his wife to move over the border, as he put it, then who knows? Maybe he's the man to get Belgium back at the races. Anyway, right, everybody, let's have a quick break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
And I think he gets himself in positions to score goals. He creates his own goals as well. And that's probably why I'd say Kili Kili. Mbappe, 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 oh. That's what we say.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Daniel Sturridge is getting very strange these days, isn't
Yeah, I like it.
But as you say, Jim, it's something for everybody there. Right, old Jimmy baby, what have you got down your trousers there?
I've got an email down my trousers okay. From Elliot
on
Nathan.
Why is it down your trousers?
Well, they got to go somewhere. I tell you, Elliot Nathan's been in touch, and I like the cut of Elliot's jib.
Go on.
Because he says, I know it's 4 years away, but I don't understand why there isn't more outrage over a 48-team World Cup. I've just finished watching Poland v Argentina, and the Poland performance was as pathetic as those from Wales and Qatar. With so many poor teams in this World Cup, how does anyone think increasing it to 48 teams is a good idea? The whole group stage will be pointless, and yes, there will be a group P. There will still be drama and there will still be good games, obviously, like that's just the nature of football, isn't it? But I completely agree with Elliot here. Like, it's too much, isn't it? 48 teams. Well, like, there are going to... Look, the worst teams we've seen at this World Cup, there are going to be teams significantly worse than them, but a number of teams significantly worse than them, and it is going to be, it might make it just a bit of a drag. You know, you don't want a tournament to feel like a chore. And it might drag into that.
Well, I think that's it. I think you've got to be careful, haven't you? Because I think there is a sweet spot with this stuff. With the Euros, a 16-team tournament, everyone thought, UK, we've increased it to that. If you increase it anymore, it will be to the detriment of the tournament. Now, I think the Euros kind of works with 24 teams. When it was 16 teams, it really was the cream of the crop. Every game was kind of box office.
I mean, the way it is now, literally half of Europe qualify for the Euros.
But then you have that. But I still think the Euros is a decent tournament, though. But purists like Lars there.
I just think it cheapens it a little bit.
Okay,
so I think just having this many teams, it's meant to be hard to get there.
It is, but like, I mean, 48 teams.
Is meant to be a huge event for your country.
48 teams would be not far off a quarter of all the international teams in the world. And the worrying thing is, as we've seen with UEFA competitions at club level, is if you dilute it so much, people just, you don't switch on until like the quarterfinals or something, as we see with like the Europa League for a lot of people. I know some teams it's precious and all, and I don't want to sound all elitist, but there is a danger of that. And I think the other thing is, for me, is actually the practicalities of it. Because you've got a lot of people saying about Qatar, oh, it's actually brilliant because the travelling distances are short. Well, okay, that in of itself is a plus point, I suppose. But actually having like a city-state almost host a World Cup, it's actually not a bad idea. Well, okay, but that's, you've got 64 games going on. You're going to have at least 80. In fact, if FIFA are now considering 12 groups of four teams because of how well the groups have gone in this competition and the drama, they think, oh, I don't want to lose that. That would mean 104 matches at the tournament, which is crazy. Now, that's okay if you've got a whole continent hosting it, which you do in 2026 with Canada, the US and Mexico. All this bollocks about, oh, actually, let's have it in a tiny little country who spend over $200 billion and all the other stuff that we know about it. It's crazy.
They won't be able to do that anymore.
Yeah, well, that should maybe not happen anyway. But the point is more like, there's almost no countries that can host it now.
Well, of course,
it's going to have to be these giant coalitions of countries.
Even after 2002, Japan and South Korea ended up with a lot of white elephant stadiums. Mm. Those are economies that can swallow that. Mm. And even they have struggled with having any use for them. And so, I mean, it really, really limits the countries
like
that can have it.
Morocco have bid for the World Cup a couple of times.
I nearly got it in 98.
I'd love a World Cup in Morocco. That'd be tremendous. Probably can't do it if it's going to be like 170 teams in there. Like,
yeah, well, exactly. It's gone. You just simply can't absorb all that kind of stuff. And also,
Colombia once almost hosted it.
They did. They
definitely can't be hosting it anytime soon. I mean, the size of the tournament.
They pulled out because
there were some shenanigans.
They were concerned, shall we say? But that was, I think, when it was.
But the point of principle is like mid-sized countries. I like the idea of having host countries that are not necessarily entire continents or oil states.
Yeah.
But that won't be a thing. And also, I'm just like, I don't want to dig anyone up. Into maybe a more sort of different allocation of what continents teams come from in the World Cup. Maybe there are too many European teams in there. Yeah, I don't know. Let's not get into that box, that can of worms. Mm. But I do think increasing the CONCACAF contingent from 3.5 to 6, possibly 7 teams. I'm just not sure 7 CONCACAF teams is what this tournament needs. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And again, it does, people can accuse us of being a bit sort of European and elitist there, but that's why I want to hammer home the practicalities, actually.
Yeah. But a lot of it is about the quality of the football, isn't it? I suppose the counter argument is that these nations will improve if they have an opportunity to get to a World Cup and learn from that tournament experience and also have more of a sort of, more of an achievable aim. But actually, the point that some of these games are dreadful.
But I think that idea,
and that's only going to get worse.
I think that idea of a team qualifying for a tournament and inspiring a generation and so on, yes, that there is that. But actually, the bigger things, I think, is footballing history and so on, but I think it's more the budget, the size of the population, all that kind of stuff massively comes into it, especially outside of Europe.
And the thing that FIFA...
Qatar can only improve so much.
And the thing that FIFA clearly don't understand is that part of what gives the World Cup its power is the scarcity, right? Mm. It is the fact that it's only every fourth year.
Yeah.
It is the fact that for most nations, just being there is an achievement.
Yep.
So you get scenes like Aboubakar scoring the goal and then just taking the red card. He's like, I'm out of here. I've done I'm peaked. Now
I've proved my point.
That's why these last days have been so unbelievably tense. Because again, even the biggest names know that they only get a couple of shots at this. The smaller countries, they know they might never qualify again, and that makes everything so pressurized.
Yeah.
And FIFA, if it was up to them, yeah, they'll have more countries in. They do it once every 2 years. They want to do.
Like, yeah. Well, that's really why the FIFA Club World yes. Cup. Yeah, they're bringing in all that bollocks.
We also
just this extraordinary insistence on shagging the goose that laid the golden egg here. I think is someone needs to have a word with them.
We also haven't even touched on the worst parts of this proposal, have we?
Yeah. Well, you're talking about this, if they do 16 groups of three teams, they're exploring the idea of having a penalty shootout in the group stage games, where the winner earns a bonus point. And there was even talk about shootouts.
Just leave it alone.
No, but get this. There was even talk about shootouts happening before games to avoid collusion in a post-game shoot. How many?
Started off.
I came here for a shootout. No, just one shootout. I wanted. Oh, blimey. We have a half-time one.
It's rubbish.
It's just love rubbish anyone watching. Idea. But I think this is the point with, especially with football. It's like the rules of the game. They were so well thought out. It's just a little tweak here and there. The back pass rule years ago now. You bring that. Yes, that's quite nice. You see it with VAR and the offside laws. That you start meddling too much with stuff, it's all over the place.
And as long as with football fans, like, we're all very hesitant about change. Like, our first, our spinal sort of reflexive reaction to all proposed changes are, no, this is bad. But I don't understand how anyone can watch football this week at the World Cup and decide, this format is terrible. Yeah. We must change this immediately. Mm. It's like, what are you on? Like,
I mean, I think the only argument is to give teams who would otherwise be very unlikely or never qualify the chance of qualifying. That's literally, and I understand the, you know, I think that's admirable to explore that and so on. And who knows, maybe you do try a 48-team World Cup. It's unlikely that people row back on ideas.
That's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah. But they're going to find out the hard way when you can only have the US, China, and I don't know, hardly anybody you can host a bloody thing because there's so many games.
Special to qualify as well.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, because it's meant to be hard. And I say that my country, I haven't been there for 2 decades. Mm. And that's just how it goes because it's meant to be really hard to qualify. Mm.
Does it end with no qualification, straight knockout, every country in the world?
Names out of a hat.
No,
England are away to Samoa. I don't know, but
Belize.
Let's enjoy this format while we have it. And we go, of course, to the group that contained Cameroon, Brazil, Serbia, and Switzerland. Cameroon beat Brazil 1-0. That man, Aboubakar, got the goal, proved us all wrong again, became only the third African player to score against Brazil at the World Cup. Didier Drogba in 2010 did it, and John Matip in 2014 got a second yellow for taking off his shirt, slapped a high five with the ref, and off he went. That was baffling.
That was so good.
Because the ref was smiling. The ref seemed to go,
fair enough. I see what you've done
here. But Boubacar was absolutely in on it and fine with it. It's like, why on earth are you so calm about this?
I'm out of here.
Well, because had they have gone through...
I've got somewhere to be. My work is done. Well, I've got somewhere to be.
Had they have gone through, he would have missed out.
Going to go and DM Mo Salah.
See that? That's the funny part. I do wonder if he knew how close they actually were to go. It wasn't impossible for them to go through. It really wasn't.
Well,
right?
I assume that when he scored that goal, he probably thought, we're in. We're through here.
Whatever you say about this World Cup, there's been a lot of good moments. Like putting together a good World Cup DVD of this one is already very easy. There's a lot of like good stuff like that.
That's always... I've seen some kind of, I suppose, I don't know what you call it, but some kind of whispering online about, oh, actually, you know, Qatar have created a really, really good World Cup. It's like, no, the football is created.
Well, you
really
do have
World
that.
Cup. That's how this works.
You do
it?
Have one or two people and a few broadcasters saying, you know what, it's since we've been here, it's actually, who would have thought if you spend over 200 billion and you've got years to plan it and as you say, all these great players turn up, it's actually, maybe it's not bad. It's like, no.
I love the broadcasters going.
Of course the trains are running. They've spent billions.
Also, I love the broadcasters and journalists who are going, can I shock you? It's actually really good to be a financially comfortable foreigner in this country. It's tremendous.
Yeah, right.
It's really good for that.
I don't think you understand, lads.
This is not what the criticism is based on.
The damage has been done. The families who have lost loved ones because they were working.
I'm a financially comfortable straight man and I really like it here.
Yeah, okay.
Look at some of the goals Qatar have laid on for us.
Anyway.
Going to be a World Cup with an aftertaste no matter what happens.
Indeed, but
the action on the field has been good, Marcus.
Well, and Aboubakar has played his part in that. Mm. The first player to score and be sent off in a World Cup match since Zinedine Zidane, of course, the 2006 final.
Aboubakar has really delivered, firstly with his essentially further shots fired at Mo Salah before the tournament for absolutely no reason. That unbelievable, like Poborski-esque scooped finish, where he didn't seem to
where
think
he
it
thought
was
he was offside.
Anyway.
Let's be honest, and he thought he was offside.
This drama with him scoring and getting sent off and seeming to think it's the funniest thing in the world. He has been absolutely box office.
Oh, he has. Embracing the chaos.
And I think we all thank him, don't we?
Yeah.
Damn right.
Yeah, we do.
Martinelli looked sharp though, Jim.
He will.
Very good player.
Easy.
Get off him.
Yeah, okay.
Don't play him again, Brazil.
Well, he might do. He put it, I mean,
yeah, I think he was the one out of the sort of B team from Brazil who really put in a good application, I think, for for getting minutes.
They were disappointing, weren't they? Actually, we've not really touched on that. It was. Well, I watched the first half of this game, the second half of Serbia Switzerland, which was absolutely the wrong way.
You bucket.
Yeah, I really did. Yeah, but it was pretty drab.
Well, we're wondered by me because again, I was double screening it, but this was definitely one of those where your eyes was drawn more to one than the other, especially in the first half.
Uh-huh. Neymar was seen getting angry in the stands, which was enjoyable.
But every time I looked up, it felt like one of these nippy wide forwards that Brazil have about 100 of were sort of running with the ball and then getting tackled. That seemed to happen a lot.
Yeah, or cutting inside and then nothing much happened and then to get
so
was repelled.
Like, for me, they really lacked Neymar as the kind of presence who will actually play a good through ball and like you know, do something aside from some running into people with it.
Mm. I mean, yeah, they seem to lack a little bit of that kind of magic touch, you know, that's going to open everything up.
Well, do you know what? Because, of course, in the Switzerland-Serbia game, there was...
chaos!
But if Switzerland...
I'm going to miss Serbia so much.
Yeah. Well, if Switzerland had scored, was it just one more? Then they would have topped the group.
Yeah.
And I think there were a lot of teams in England's part, half of the group going, come on, Switzerland, don't. Because actually, Brazil now face South Korea, of course. Mm. And obviously, that won't be easy. No game will be easy in this round of 16. But it actually has cemented my belief that Brazil will win this World Cup because they play South Korea, which, again, they would take. No disrespect to South Korea, but we're focusing on the talent Brazil have. They will then face, if they do win that, which I think they will then face Japan or Croatia, which, again, you would take.
Yeah.
Which, if you look at the other sides, the favourites in the games today, Netherlands, US and Argentina, Australia, you know, you on paper, you'd think Netherlands, Argentina, it's a tough one. On paper, again, the favourites, England and France, people might have in the quarterfinal, Spain versus Portugal. Now, the beautiful thing about this tournament, the way it is that you can never know. There's been so many shocks.
Mm.
But the fact is, if you look at teams who have gone on to win the World Cup, seldom do they have to play three really big sides on the way to do it. It's usually, sometimes it's just one, often it's two. And I think Brazil, you know, that could play into it. People say, if you've got to beat the best, the route does matter.
Yeah, it's not necessarily true. Having to beat the best of the best once is better than having to do it three
times.
To raise
your game for four games in a row, it's very difficult. But they are through. And of course, they are through with Switzerland, who have got a rather difficult task in their game against Portugal. But Switzerland beat Serbia 3-2.
They did.
And the tempo was set in the first minute when Milinkovic-Savic in the Serbia goal had to make a triple save early on. But it was a great game, this, especially the first half.
I really enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the Serbians because they've been very, very attacking. And they do this weird thing of twice in the tournament, they've gone 2-1 up, only to keep an inexplicably high line and things...
Well, 3-1 against Cameroon.
Yeah, things just collapse completely. They're a team that... Mm. I mean, in this game, they have... The scarcity of strikers. They've got not one, but two great number nines up front. And then they play with wingbacks, both of whom are retooled wingers, not retooled fullbacks. You know this with wingbacks. They're either retooled fullbacks or retooled wingers. Both Kostic and Zivkovic are very much wingers who have been pulled back. Mm. And then they've got like three defenders who are all kind of slow behind all of this. And it's just been madness. All of their games have been tremendous. I've really enjoyed them.
But such attacking talent. And of course, they know how to score goals, but you can't concede 8 goals in the group stage and expect to go through.
No, you really can't. But I'd rather have teams like that. And I think it's a travesty that Poland are still in this tournament. Sorry, Poles. Whereas the Serbians are going home. I very much enjoyed their stylings.
Mm. Yeah, I think to be fair though, the value Poland might bring will be what they allow France to do in that next game.
Hopefully you pin them back as much as possible, but that doesn't seem likely. Because even when they were trying to defend for their lives against Argentina, they still relied on Argentina missing a load of good chances. Yeah. But in that game between Serbia and Switzerland, obviously Jerdan Shaqiri scored.
Of course he does.
I mean, my goodness.
The power cube.
Yeah, absolutely. Now one of only three players to have scored at each of the last three World Cups, including this one, of course. The other two, of course, Messi and Ronaldo.
But he very is good very company. Much the Messi of the Alps, as we know.
Ah, and he was the Messi of Stoke for a little while.
Of course.
But he just ever present. It'll be a strange World Cup when he's not there. There will be a day when him and Ochoa won't be at the World Cup.
I feel like that about playing. Ricardo Rodriguez as well, for the Switzerland left back. But Panning's only 30.
Yeah. Bollocks, is he?
But Shaka's always... Shaqiri's always been this guy who just... this very, really quite successful Swiss generation who, you know, consistently get to tournaments and consistently get out of the group.
They're probably underrated for that a little bit.
Yeah,
actually,
I think
they?
So. But they have also been a little bit dull. It's not been the most exciting team. And Shaqiri's always been the one that adds a little bit of spice.
Well, that's right.
To proceedings.
Yeah, I mean, Shaqiri himself, he's only 31. Which
he's not aging well as far as... I mean, I'm not one to talk, but in sort of footballing terms... Oh. If you put him and, like, say, Dani Alves next to each other and, like, guess who's the oldest?
Yeah, but Dani Alves is a bit of a freak of nature.
I know. I'm just saying he's 8 years younger. So.
True, yeah. But, I mean, Shaqiri's got well over 100 caps for Switzerland.
He's been around for a long time.
He has.
So, interestingly, looking at Shaqiri's Wikipedia page, him having, I think it's like 111 caps means he's played more times for Switzerland than any one club.
He is one of those players who's kind of looked better for his national team,
yeah,
I
very
think.
Much so.
I wonder if there's something about the sort of inherent chaos of international football. Things is a little bit less organised and a little bit smooth and machine-like.
Yeah.
His sort of particular brand of footballing anarchy kind of lends itself well to
maybe.
It, I wonder.
Quite possibly.
I also enjoyed how, like, he's not... He's been a little bit underwhelming in MLS for the Chicago Fire after going there. And again, does not look like a 31-year-old in terms of his physical output. After about an hour of this game, he was done. He had no intention of running any longer. There was one sort of the ball that was played in front of him around the hour mark, and he just very reluctantly sprinted. You could tell he did not want any more of this.
Well, that was kind of it. There was a big old lull midway through the second half in this game.
And not in a joke sense. But
we welcome a lull.
A good lull.
But we often don't want a lull.
No.
And that was obviously what you saw, Jim, when you just flicked over. You thought, this
because
is the game
to watch.
Because
I did miss the third goal for Switzerland, obviously.
And it was funny because Switzerland, when they scored that goal, not long after that, it felt like Serbia thought, we're done.
But Serbia looked like that against Brazil as well towards the end. Mm. It was a bit different in the Cameroon game because it was so mad. But that, it might have been the case that they simply couldn't get near enough the ball against Brazil that it looked like they'd given up.
But against Brazil, I get that.
That sense was there as well, that they didn't have much fight.
Before we move on, nice little header from Mitrovic, wasn't it?
Oh, lovely. Lovely glancing header.
Yeah, he scored two of them a week in the championship. So at least he got a couple of World Cup goals. So very pleased about
Tremendous
that.
Dive towards the end as well.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Even he knew.
There's something about being that big and obviously muscly that when you try to dive you just look even more ridiculous. It's like when centre halves try to do it just looks wrong.
Yeah, you're kind of saying to the referee, this isn't a foul.
Yeah,
you know, but there we are. All right, everybody, well, that's it. The first round is over, and what a first round it was. Could be the last of its kind. Sadly, we sincerely hope not, but there we are. We cannot trust FIFA.
Stop being idiots, FIFA.
Indeed, indeed.
We need to overthrow them.
We should say
genuinely that there needs to be something other than FIFA.
Yeah,
my view.
Well, Jim, get cracking on that,
okay.
And I will join your revolution. No team qualified for the second round in this tournament with a 100% record.
Mm.
No team reached 9 points, and that's the first time that's happened since USA '94.
Interesting.
It shows you the sort of a bit more level these days. You could argue England qualified with the best record in the tournament. Lars,
they did. It's coming home, but I'm actually not. Super, because I just remember doing preview for this tournament and I kept thinking, well, there are some good players here, but there's some glaring flaws in this team. Like, there's almost no team that you look at and says these are just fine and brilliant. Yeah. So I'm not surprised that there's no perfect record.
I mean, the groups has reflected that, hasn't it? And it means that, I mean, the some of the names that are missing from these knockout games are glaring. And I think there's going to probably be some upsets, you would think. Mm-hmm. I have a suspicion the USA might beat the Netherlands today, you know.
Do you really?
Yeah, I think so too.
That's big shouts. I think Netherlands, I don't know, I could see them squeezing.
Boring their way through it.
Yeah, penalties maybe, or a last
really
minute.
Really bad. I mean, the thing I worry about, I have American friends, I quite want them to win this.
I see.
I worry about Cody Gapko, the sort of form he's in. I'm worried about him rattling one in for 25 yards.
Yeah, Depay's got more to give as well.
Yeah, and him certainly finding some fitness, yeah. But with the Americans, I think if they can swarm the midfield and press people like they did against you guys, I don't think the Dutch will be able to play very well. But the question is where the goals are coming from. They've had a striker issue in this tournament, the Americans. And yeah, it's the Gapco factor concerns me.
Yeah, but it's the Louis van Gaal factor for me, baby.
He already has his eye on a beach resort in Belgium. The next job is all settled.
Well, I think honestly that when you've got someone like van Gaal who knows his way around these tournaments, it's such a huge thing.
They had two shots against Ecuador. Where was van Gaal then?
Yeah.
Got a point though.
Mm. Exactly. He always gets at least
a point. Got a point, top the group.
There we are.
He knows what he's doing.
Up yours. Argentina will play Australia, of course. Maybe Graham Arnold will be that inspirational figure. I mean, they've done remarkably well, Australia, in this tournament, and they've earned their glamour tie against Argentina. Can they do it, Jim?
I would be surprised if they managed to do it. I would obviously love it if they did it. Yeah. It would be fantastic. They've been such a sort of likable presence, and they've earned their place in the knockout rounds with two really, really hard-fought wins. That period against France at the beginning, I was like, God, are they actually going to do this? Nearly went 2-0 up with an absolute like howitzer from long range. Yeah. It wasn't quite to happen, but they still went through. So I think Argentina are going to go through, though, because they've done that thing that we've only really seen them do, where they've grown into the tournament. You know, they had a big shock. They had a better result after that to get themselves up and running again. And then they were excellent in the third game. So I think actually,
well, they pick up their emotions suddenly become like a runaway freight train.
And this is what Argentina thrive on,
pick
right?
up the pace.
They do need that sense of like overcoming the odds, being the underdog, proving everybody wrong. And we've seen that from them whenever they've been successful. Mm. And that narrative is unfolding as we speak. So I'm very intrigued to see what level the performance is at from Argentina today.
Yeah,
maybe they are contenders. People were saying it before the tournament, then they wrote them off, and now look where they are.
Well, I thought they weren't as big contenders as a lot of people have thought. But then again, you start to kind of map out in your mind's eye, it's not a great Dutch side. You'd fancy them against the US.
Yeah.
It all builds to a semi-final against Brazil, which would be quite something. But I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves.
Because they need to play well at some point. And obviously they were better against Poland, but Poland were abysmal.
Yeah.
So I find it very hard, like, sending Argentina all the way through to the
semis
before they've shown anything at all.
We could be sat here tomorrow saying, bloody hell, Australia have done it. Do you know what I mean? Like, again, this World Cup has been great because of the shocks. And you can't write anybody off. Obviously, again, you pick your favourites based on how bloody obvious it is on paper, but you never know. And also, if they can grab any of the... if there's any notes being passed around by the Argentinians, they may be able to do... Did you see this? That Australia, apparently they made quite an inspired substitution when they beat Denmark because they managed to get one of the opposition notes. Now, on 70 minutes, a Danish sub carried a note onto the field to give it to Christian Eriksen. And then a couple of minutes later, that note appeared to end up in the hands of the Aussie coaching staff. Now, maybe they read Danish, maybe they quit Google Translate, I don't know. But on 74 minutes, Australia made a sub and switched their formation up.
Can I have to start writing them on like rice paper so you just eat it when it's done? Because it's dangerous having this information around.
Yeah,
I do wonder if this will work against Argentina, though, because the question is, who's actually calling the shots with that team? Mm. I mean, Scaloni was asked if he should have subbed Messi to protect him towards the end against Poland, and he said, I wouldn't substitute Messi unless he tells me to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's more of a case of if you want to intercept the notes, you've got to just hover around Messi and see what commands he's sending out.
Indeed, yeah. Well, everybody, let the knockouts commence. We're off. We are, and it's only in a matter of hours. We're here with shows every day throughout the round of 16. Starting tomorrow with Jules, Pete and Andy, who will be in your ears talking about those Aussies and Argentinians and Dutch and American people. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Thank you, Jim Campbell.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lars Sivertsen.
Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you, everybody. See you soon.
Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.